more horror. Things got a lot worse in 1997. The Swedish Academy gave another round of Gaussian-based Nobel Prizes to Myron Scholes and Robert C. Merton, who'd improved on an old mathematical formula and made it compatible with the existing grand Gaussian general financial equilibrium theories, hence acceptable to the economics establishment. The formula was now usable. It had a list of long-forgotten precursors, among whom was the mathematician and gambler Ed Thorpe, who had authored the best-selling Beat the Dealer, about how to get ahead in blackjack. But somehow people believe that Scholes and Merton invented it, when in fact they just made it acceptable. The formula was my bread and butter. Traders, bottom-up people, know its wrinkles better than academics by dint of spending their nights worrying about their risks, except that few of them could express their ideas in technical terms, so I felt I was representing them. Scholes and Merton made the formula dependent on the Gaussian, but their precursors subjected it to no such restriction. More technically, remember my career as an option professional. Not only does an option on a very long shot benefit from black swans, but it benefits disproportionately from them, something Scholes and Merton's formula misses. The option payoff is so powerful that you don't have to be right on the odds. You can be wrong on the probability, but get a monstrously large payoff. I've called this the double bubble, the mispricing of the probability and that of the payoff. The post-crash years were entertaining for me, intellectually. I attended conferences in finance and mathematics of uncertainty. Not once did I find a speaker, Nobel or no Nobel, who understood what he was talking about when it came to probability, so I could freak them out with my questions. They did deep work in mathematics, but when you asked them where they got their probabilities, their explanations made it clear that they had fallen for the ludic fallacy. There was a strange cohabitation of technical skills and absence of understanding that you find in idiot savants. Not once did I get an intelligent answer, or one that wasn't ad hominem. Since I was questioning their entire business, it was understandable that I drew all manner of insults: obsessive, commercial, philosophical, essayist, idle man of leisure, repetitive, practitioner. This is an insult in academia. Academic. This is an insult in business. Being on the receiving end of angry insults is not that bad. You can get used to it and focus on what's not said. Pit traders are trained to handle angry rants. If you work in the chaotic pits, someone in a particularly bad mood from losing money might start cursing at you until he injures his vocal cords, then forget about it and an hour later invite you to his Christmas party. So you become numb to insults, particularly if you teach yourself to imagine that the person uttering them is a variant of a noisy ape with little personal control. Just keep your composure, smile, focus on analyzing the speaker, not the message, and you'll win the argument. An ad hominem attack against an intellectual, not against an idea, is highly flattering. It indicates that the person doesn't have anything intelligent to say about your message.